Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest in the OIES podcast series. My name is James Henderson, and I'm Director of the Energy Transition Research Initiative at OIES. Today, I'm joined by Martin Lambert, who's a Senior Research Fellow, and Ali Abdelshafi, who's a Saudi Aramco Fellow at the Institute. And we're going to be discussing the theme of their latest paper, The Role of CCUS in Decarbonising the Cement Industry, a German Case Study. Martin, Ali, welcome to the OIES podcast series.
Thanks, Rash, Jim. It's great to be back.
Thanks, James. It's also my pleasure.
Okay, Martin, let me start with you. And a very high-level question. Can you just explain to us why you thought it was important to publish a paper about CCUS in cement?
Yeah, maybe a bit of context is interesting because, as you know, I'm heading hydrogen research at the Institute, and this paper is not really about hydrogen, but we got into it via the hydrogen route. So Ali came to us to be a Saudi Aramco fellow and was wanting to do some work on hard-to-abate sectors in Germany. And we started looking at steel and cement, but then we narrowed the paper down to focus just on cement and realised actually that hydrogen wasn't that relevant here, but CCS was very relevant. And so having a paper on cement industry, CCUS, and a case study in Germany seemed ideal.
Okay, well, let me turn to you then, Ali, and just let's start right at the high level, very basics. What is carbon capture and storage and utilisation?
First of all, James, thanks for having us. Martin, Professor Walter, and I hope that this contribution would be an added value to the ongoing discussion on CCUS. In a few words, CCS refers to the set of operations or processes that involve capturing the CO2, then transporting it, and eventually storing it geologically. Utilization refers to using the carbon dioxide in producing new valuable products. Here, we talk about a wide range of technologies and alternatives. Actually, parts of this supply chain are not very new or novel. For example, CO2 enhanced oil recovery has been applied in the USA since decades, and there is an established CO2 network of more than 7,000 kilometers. Carbon utilization has also various applications in the beverage and food industry. So the question now is, how can we improve the existing and emerging technologies and maybe invent new ones? Because we need to decrease the costs and increase the technology readiness level or reliability. Moreover, how the industry can scale up? For example, currently around 70 million tons of carbon dioxide are transported annually via the network mentioned in the North America, while the International Energy Agency expects that 400 million tons from the cement industry will or shall be mitigated annually via CCS by 2050. So such transformation will also trigger many other questions related to the social acceptance and legislation that have to be addressed and answered.
Okay, thanks. I mean, clear then that the cement industry is a major emitter and the CCUS can play a role. But Martin, more generally, CCS is becoming increasingly important for the energy transition. Perhaps you could expand on that a little. And also, we've kind of touched on hard-to-abate emissions. Could you say a little bit more about that as well for our listeners?
Yeah, so CCUS being important, Ali touched there on some numbers about the cement industry. I think it's also worth mentioning just the scale of the challenge in general. So if you look at the IEA net zero scenario, they're talking about getting to over 1,500 million tonnes by 2030, that's of CO2 per year being captured, and then getting to between 7,000 and 8,000 million tonnes by 2050. To put those in context, today, after about 20 years of developing the CCS industry, we've got 40 million tonnes being captured. So the ambition is huge, with a very long way to go. And those IEA scenarios are actually the bottom end of the range of expectations. So CCUS is pretty important for areas where you can't electrify it. Basically, an easy-to-abate sector is something you can electrify. A hard-to-abate sector is something where you can't easily electrify it, and either because of process emissions, which is the case in cement, or just because of maybe energy density or other requirements. So various drivers of hard-to-abate sectors, but I think ones that can't be electrified is a pretty good place to start as a definition.
Okay, thanks. That's actually a very useful and very clear and simple definition. So thanks. Now let's come back to the cement industry, which obviously is the focus of this report. Ali, let me come to you again. Why is the cement industry fairly unique in the energy transition? What is it about the industry that means CCUS is so important?
Well, James, I think cement industry is unique for various reasons. Globally, more than 4 billion tons of cement are produced annually, which result in approximately 7% of the global greenhouse gas emissions. The global production has been increasing exponentially since the Second World War. The production has increased more than 80-fold. Basically, we cannot imagine the modern construction industry without cement. Concrete is actually the second most consumed material after water, and there is no other effective or affordable bonding material. So far, so good, but we need to produce clinker in order to produce cement eventually, and clinker production is associated with significant amounts of process emissions due to the calcination process. The calcination process refers to the chemical process of transforming the calcium carbonates to calcium oxides, which results in significant amounts of carbon dioxide. Approximately two-thirds of the clinker carbon footprint can be attributed to limestone calcination. Therefore, they can be classified as hard-to-abate emissions, as they will be generated regardless of the source of energy used in the production. Therefore, CCUS will definitely be needed to sequester these emissions in the future.
Okay. I mean, Martin, that sounds like CCS has got an absolutely critical role here. But, you know, does this mean the cement industry has to fully depend on CCUS to mitigate its emissions?
Not fully, no. So as Ali said, process emissions are a very important part of the emissions from the cement industry. And for those process emissions, then I guess you do need to fully depend on CCS because you can't do much else about them. But the other part of the emission, about a third currently in cement, comes from the energy use. And that energy use, you can switch to low carbon alternatives, which could be electricity, could be hydrogen to some extent. So there is an ability to reduce the energy consumption part and emissions from that. But I think for the process emissions, then CCUS is pretty much unavoidable.
Okay, well, that gives us the context then. So clearly CCS, very significant for the cement industry and other parts of the chain as well. Let's get into some of the details. Firstly, CO2 capture. Ali, let me come to you. Is that a challenging process? I mean, are we just capturing CO2 or are we capturing other gases as well?
What comes out of the stack or chimney is the flue gas, and carbon dioxide constitutes only a part of it, except in some processes in the chemical industry, such as ammonia production, which yield a quite pure CO2 stream. The flue gas from the clinker plant contains around 20% carbon dioxide. This ratio is relatively high if we compare it with other industrial processes. However, we still need to separate it from the rest of the flue gas constituents. CO2 capture and purification imply energy penalties, capital and operational costs. These factors, of course, depend on the relevant technologies. We have always to keep in account that there are different generations depending on the technology readiness level. But generally speaking, the CO2 capture has the highest contribution to the total CCS costs. regardless the scientific principle, the main goal is to find a method to separate or capture the CO2 from the other constituents. There are several technological options and also various classifications. For example, the capture technologies can be classified based on the mechanism, which refers to the scientific principle applied. For example, absorption or adsorption, or the substance used in the capture process, or the configuration, which indicates if the technology is a tail end or should be integrated within the production process.
Okay, I mean, and what are the typical capture technologies that are used? What's can you talk us through a little bit of the science?
Yeah, sure. Well, the cement industry explores various options, but there are already some technologies with high potentials. For example, amine scrubbing, which has the highest technology readiness level, being used in the industry for years. The technology basically uses amine as a solvent to absorb the CO2 while the flue gas flows and then recover the CO2 from the solvent. There are also other technologies that have been investigated, such as oxyfuel, calcium lubing, and direct separation. These technologies actually belong to direct mechanisms, which offer the operators a good level of flexibility to select a suitable technology. It should be noted that these studies have reported a wide range of costs. In general, we should not consider the cheapest alternative as the most promising technology. Firstly, the studies normally use different assumptions, for example, the electricity prices, which can significantly impact the OPEX and consequently the total costs as well. Second, the figures of some technologies are actually based are actually not based on industrial scale plants. Moreover, other factors that should be taken into account, such as maintenance, reliability, and retrofitting requirements. Therefore, there are actually some studies mention costs below 50 euro per ton of CO2. However, such values are definitely questionable or debatable, I would say.
I was going to ask you about cost. I mean, that 50 euro a ton obviously sounds very low. What would you say the kind of average cost at the moment? What kind of carbon price, for example, would you think would be required at the moment to make CCUS work?
We have the, I would say, amine scrubbing, which is has the highest technology readiness level, is around 100 euro per ton, more or less, I would say. And nevertheless, such cost can be considered as quite high. And we need, if we compare it with the CO2 prices and the additional cost for transportation and storage eventually. So what we also highlight in the study, we need both reliable technology with high technology readiness level, as well as lower costs, which can be achieved only if we have more research projects and analysis, either in the plants and also what we do currently in our as a disk analysis in our research.
Okay. Well, look, we've talked then about the capture side. Let's move on to transport. What do we do with the captured CO2 once we've got it? How do we move it around?
Well, firstly, we should highlight that the purity of the captured CO2 may not be enough for the required specifications for transportation and storage. And in such cases, an additional purification phase may be required, which also implies additional costs. Unfortunately, the storage sites are not available everywhere. Therefore, the captured CO2 has to be transported from the source to the sink. As any industrial gas, carbon dioxide can be transported via different transportation modes, such as trucks, trains, shipping, and pipelines. Generally speaking, CO2 transportation has high technology readiness level due to the industrial applications already mentioned in the beginning. The economies of scale also play a vital role here. Therefore, shipping and pipelines are cheaper than trucks and railway with high magnitudes and long distances. For extremely long distances, I mean more than 1,500 kilometers, shipping will be more economic than pipeline, regardless of the flow rate. The CO2 is normally transported in two phases, either as a liquid or supercritical phase, which of course depend on the pressure and temperature. It's also important to highlight that the transportation mode is not only is not the sole system component. Other supportive facilities are needed along the logistical system to ensure the efficiency required, such as ports, buffer storage, loading and unloading systems.
Okay, so an awful lot of stuff to be put together then, not just the transport mode, as you say, but the other ancillary items. So therefore, you know, does location matter? I mean, you know, the synergy benefits of doing all this in an industrial cluster presumably help. So is that how we're going to see this develop in industrial clusters? Perhaps, well, the case study you use is Germany. So is that what we're seeing develop in Germany, industrial clusters for gathering CO2?
Yes, sure, James. Location significantly influence all the economic and industrial activities, especially if a complex supply chain has to be realized. Therefore, we have included the western part of Germany to highlight how that can have an impact. As there is no geological storage capacity in North Rhine-Westphalia, the state will need to depend on the storage capacities in other regions, such as Niedersachsen or North Sea in Germany. The location of North Rhine-Westphalia can also enable the industry to consider the suitable or existing storage capacities in neighboring countries, such as the Netherlands and the UK. Especially if carbon dioxide shipping is considered as an interim transportation mode in the coming few years. The clinker plants in North Rhine-Westphalia actually form a kind of industrial cluster in the northeastern part of the state, which can help in establishing a common CO2 infrastructure. However, the remoteness of the clinker plants from the main industrial hub in the Ruhrgebiet implies that the industry must invest additional infrastructure to be connected in case Rotterdam is assumed to be the main CO2 hub in the future.
Okay, thank you. Martin, let me come back to you then. I mean, and this carry on this theme of infrastructure. You know, is there the possibility to use existing infrastructure? I mean, will there be common infrastructure for CO2 transportation and storage? How do you see this kind of being optimized in the future?
Yeah, it's a very good question, actually, because there's not much existing infrastructure. There's a bit of CO2 infrastructure in the US, but in Europe, there's really nothing at the moment. Apart from, the only CO2 in Europe is a couple of gas fields in Norway where CO2 is captured and stored. So technically it can be done. But common infrastructure is really important because if you imagine like one cement plant or one power plant, if that had to build its own CO2 transport and storage system, that would be horribly expensive. So by common infrastructure, from, say, an industrial cluster like in the Ruhr area or on the northeast of the UK, they can share pipelines and wells and injection systems into the reservoir. So common infrastructure has a lot of sense to get those economies of scale. The problem, though, comes from, so Ali mentioned CO2 purity earlier. There needs to be a consistent standard of what goes into that infrastructure. And there's a lot of commercial challenges as well, because it kind of looks a bit like a gas pipeline network. So challenges around, is it a regulated asset? who owns it, who operates it, how's the commercial interaction between each of the suppliers of CO2 and the operator of the infrastructure. So the theoretical answer, yes, we need common infrastructure, is very clear. The practicalities of making it work commercially is quite challenging and still being worked through. I mean, in the UK, for example, the government is doing some work on CO2 business models. And so that's probably groundbreaking stuff that will then have some lessons to draw on. One final challenge, I think, is around that storage part, is around the liability of that. So you can regulate who puts the CO2 in, who's liable for doing that. But if it has to be stored for the next thousands of years, answering questions on liability for the CO2 once it's been stored, that's an important challenge around common infrastructure as well. So yes, we need common infrastructure. How we make it work is still a bit up in the air, I think.
Okay, interesting, Martin, that you mentioned liability there, which kind of takes us down a sort of legal route. And I guess the other thing I wanted to ask you, Ali, as well, was, you know, in Germany, there's been a certain reticence around certainly CO2 storage and the kind of social aspects of responding to this capturing of CO2 and then moving it around and what you do with it afterwards. So does the study address those social questions, and also does it touch on the legal aspects that, that Martin's raised around, you know, liability for the CO2 and other issues?
These two aspects are extremely important, James, and therefore we thought it can be very insightful or important to include them in our study. Even if we omit the technical and economic challenges discussed in the paper, the economic, the techno-economic feasibility, and if we have a positive environmental impact, do not imply that the project, the CCS project, is ready to be commissioned. CCS is a very controversial and can be labeled as unpopular, especially in Europe for various reasons. The public engagement and endorsement are indispensable. Some communities are going to be very close to the CO2 infrastructure, pipelines, and storage sites. Any opposition currently or in the future can definitely influence the project negatively or may lead to cancellation. Therefore, defining the factors that influence or frame the public perception is very important. The public opinion, fears, comprehension should be seriously taken into account, regardless of whether they are based on scientific facts or stereotypes. In terms of legislation, the legal aspect is actually a key part of all mentioned aspects. The legal complexities can also be considered as an additional obstacle, which can be more obvious in the federal system due to the different legislative spheres. For example, constructing a CO2 pipeline necessitates several consecutive phases, which are governed by different laws and include several authorities and entities. Moreover, these practices are actually unprecedented in Germany, for example, which incur various legal uncertainties.
Interesting. So still some quite a lot being developed there, not just on the technology front, but on the sort of, if you like, the legal and social infrastructure and discussions around that as well. So, which leads me, I guess, to my final question as we come to the end of the podcast is, you know, how are you going to move on from this study? What future research plans do you have around the issues you've talked about so far? Ali, let me start with you.
Well, there are still some knowledge gaps, James, that need to be addressed. Many capture technologies have low technology readiness level. We need to decrease the costs, as mentioned, and consequently, more research and projects are needed. Regarding the economic uncertainties, more analysis on suitable funding instruments and mechanisms such as carbon contracts for difference can be also very helpful to move the industry forward. We also need to address the theme of infrastructure further. As Martin mentioned, having a common CO2 network can extensively reduce the costs. However, this topic is not only limited to the technical and commercial challenges. Social and legal factors can have significant impacts on both the regional and European levels.
Yeah, okay, thanks, Ali. That's great. And Martin, I'm going to come to you for the final word. I mean, obviously, it sounds very much like the cement industry is a fantastic example of a hard-to-abate sector and what's being done there to try and decarbonize it. What about the rest of the research you're doing in the Energy Transition Initiative?
Yeah, as you say, cement is just one example, but there are several other hard-to-abate sectors out there. And as part of the energy transition research, so we've already launched the hydrogen module, and we're planning to launch a CCS module in the future, looking at those hard-to-abate sectors and how to commercialize through the energy transition. So, for example, in the hydrogen module, we're looking at steel making as well, where hydrogen probably has a role, but then CCS has a role there as well. So we're certainly looking at steel making and how to abate emissions from that, which is, along with cement, is the other really big emitter in the industrial sector. Another hard to abate sector we'll be looking at is long haul shipping. And again, various hydrogen derivatives like ammonia could have a role there. But then speaking more generally about our sort of nascent CCUS module, the intention there is, a bit like in hydrogen, to focus on the challenge of scaling up and how to commercialize it and how to turn it from its current interesting but fairly small pilot projects into something that can really make an impact on the scale of the global energy system. So lots more work to do, I think, but it should all be pretty interesting.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much indeed, Martin, for that. And yeah, without wishing to push it too much, the OIES CCUS module will be up and running in the next couple of months. So hopefully there's some interesting research will be coming out of that too, and we'll be talking to the leaders of that module on future podcasts. But in the meantime, Martin, Ali, thank you very much indeed. It was a fascinating podcast. It's a really interesting read. The paper is on the OIES website now. You'll hear details at the end of the podcast. But in the meantime, thank you very much indeed for listening. Please do all stay healthy and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.